Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Get a sense of yourself and go do some things on your own before you become a mother. Not saying it's bad if you don't. I didn't. So I'm sweet. I didn't. I did not have a big career. I went to nursing school after we got married. My advice to you would be get your degree if you want one. Get out, work, buy your own car.
Have your own adventures.
Get insurance, travel on your own dime, to go do some things with girlfriends, go live in another city, go do some things, see the world, make it bigger, meet different people before you become completely tied to, either a partner and or children for one or the other. I went from being somebody's daughter to somebody's girlfriend to somebody's wife to somebody's mom. And I was never... There was never a real big, clear sense of identity. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me, Sis. Lise, how about this consistent recording? I'm so proud of us. We're getting it done. So great to see you, and so thankful for all of you that are joining us today. And we have a great episode for you today. I think this is something particularly the younger moms are going to find interesting. So you might want to grab a cup of coffee or a cocktail or your water bottle, whatever you like, right, and get comfortable because we are going to talk about motherhood and all the things that maybe we didn't hear that we needed to hear when we were venturing into this wonderful world of raising our children. So this is going to be a good one, and we're just going to share some things from our lives that we've learned along the way. But before we get into the meat of it, Lise, tell me what has been going on in your life.
Well, we've had a really exciting week in our neck of the woods, and we can talk about it more later, but like the biggest, most notable, most amazing thing that happened this week is Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia signed Rio's law into law officially. I have to say that is the cherry on top of the cake.
Amazing. Yeah. So awesome. So
how about
awesome.
You? What's going on over there?
My oldest, Taylor, Tanner's older sister, is the director of a dance studio, and this was her recital week, which is sort of the culmination of a year's worth of work.
Hectic week, I bet.
Yeah, very big week for her. And I am talking as a mom, shout out to Taylor. I am so freaking proud of her. She had a baby this year. Obviously, she's freshly a new mom, which goes with the theme of today. And she also teaches 160 girls how to dance and pulls off
What are the ages?
All the way from 3 to seniors in high school.
Wow.
And it was fabulous as always. And she did it all while navigating the end of pregnancy, delivery, new motherhood, postpartum. And it was just great. And one of the most special parts of this year's recital was Zoe's senior solo. Zoe is a student who's been with Taylor for years and years and years. She is graduating high school this year, and she has Down syndrome. And she is a fabulous dancer, an amazing human being, and truly like she's an incredible success story. She's done beautifully in school and danced all the way through. And it was just, oh my gosh, it's such
how,
a touching
how
moment.
How was the dance? How was the dance?
It was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful. So it was really a special week. And while we were involved with that on the home front, Tanner and Midge are in California at Night of Too Many Stars, where last night all the proceeds were to benefit Next for Autism. So that's really, really cool.
I love that. I did see that they went. Yeah, we missed out on that this year.
Oh, so fun. And I think he got to meet Emma from season four, who we, of course, had not met.
No.
And he got to meet Dylan and see Abby. Oh, he saw Sabote. He saw Danny. So yeah, really, really cool time for
getting the band back together out in LA. Yes, that was so fun.
And add in the new members. So that was real. And he saw Kian and Sean, which, you know, who is who.
Yeah, right. But I want to say one other thing. There was a birthday yesterday.
There was.
Of one of our sisses. It was Nikki's birthday, and she was 30.
Right. Again.
Yeah, but happy belated birthday by one you. Day. But we want to make sure everyone knows yesterday was Nikki's Thank birthday.
You. Thank you so much.
Did you do anything for that?
Honestly,
besides the recital.
Not a doggone thing. That was just so perfectly fine with me. I mean, the last 2 years have been like one big long gift. So yeah. Having a particular celebration on a particular day really didn't matter. But I am thankful to be 54, have four amazing children, a wonderful husband. I'm healthy. I've got a lot of family around me. What more could I ask for? It was a good day. And I actually took a nap yesterday afternoon after all the traveling. I was so exhausted. And it kind of caught up with me yesterday. I said, it's my birthday. I'm going to take a nap. So I did.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, it was good.
That is so funny. I'm not a napper.
I know you're not. That amazes me.
I'm like, so hyper.
Even if you're sleepy, like you didn't, it doesn't refresh
you to lay
down.
If I'm napping, I'm sick. I have a fever. No, I don't nap.
Another one of my closest friends is the same way. And like, for me,
I feel guilty.
That's so crazy. Like for me, nothing recharges me. Now, if I lay down and if I were to sleep longer than like 30 minutes, then I wouldn't sleep that night.
Yeah.
But like a 20 to 30 minute just, and I will fall into the heaviest, deepest sleep.
No.
And come right back and come, and then I feel great till the evening. But some afternoons I'm just like this. That's wild.
If I'm in the bed, if I'm in the bed and anytime during daylight,
yeah,
I am definitely sick. I can count on one hand since I've been a mother.
Yeah.
That I've ever laid down to take a nap, which would be part of my advice here in a minute.
Yeah.
But my kids get completely freaked out. They get completely freaked out because they're like, what's wrong with her? And that is truly when they all rally the troops because they know they're like, something's wrong with that girl because she's in the bed. I cannot do it.
I get like a physical, like a heavy head feeling, like my eyes want to close. Nope. That never happens to you?
And even if I tried to put myself down in the bed, I get more of a, get up, this is wrong. You shouldn't be here.
So, you know, that is truly, I think, just like a metabolic wiring thing. Because like I've always joked, like if I have that sleepy feeling, I could lay down on an airport floor and fall asleep. And I would fall dead asleep. And like it wouldn't bother. Like I would just fall asleep and then I would feel so much better. Isn't that weird?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is totally weird, but yeah, like hearing what you're saying has got my anxieties going up listening to it.
No, I'm a huge nap. I love a little quick cat nap. Love it. That's so
I always
funny.
Am like, I'll sleep when I'm dead. That's when I'll catch up, I guess.
I do need more sleep than you do because I can tell like when we've traveled together, like, I need a certain amount of sleep in the morning. Like I need to get 7 to 8 hours no matter when I go to bed. Like I need to get
And so while we're on this topic, just like fun fact, which is another thing that people in my family just stand by in bewildered awe, like everybody.
Uh-huh.
I never, and I'm not like, it's not like I'm hitting it hard all the time, but if there's a party or we've done something, I don't get hangovers.
That's wild.
It doesn't happen.
And see,
which probably isn't good because there's no
there's no reason not to drink
for letting it rip.
You know, I can have, I'm not much of a drinker at all. If I eat first, I'm okay. It won't bother me so much. But if there's not much food in my stomach, I can have one and I will feel like crap the next day. Complete crowd. And like that is like another, with always having been a fitness instructor and usually most days, like my schedule would be that I have to be up and like literally physical pretty early in the morning the next day.
Yep.
That's why I've just always, and don't get me wrong, I will drink. I mean, I enjoy a social drink, but I just choose not to most of the time because I know I'm going to feel bad. Like I will not feel good.
I think the time that crazy? I really offended most people with it, and not offended, I'm saying offended like jokingly.
Yeah.
It was actually my very first trip to England ever. It was 1995. It was Christmas. Mm-hmm. And we were Christmas Eve. I was with the English, and it was like English. A pub tour. It was like a pub crawl, and it was just debauchery in England on Christmas Eve. And everybody was enjoying the holiday.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
And the next morning we had to get up to go to church, and everyone was dragging, and I just like pinged and was bopping down the aisle and hall. And I remember Connor's grandmother, who's now passed, and Simon's mother literally sat up from her bed as I was bopping down the hallway, holding her head. And she's like, "You cow."
Just that, you know, but that's interesting. And another reason why, like, as women, like, never, like, I don't know, like, compare yourself or, you know what I mean? Like, be jealous or whatever you want to say to another woman. Because we literally are all just built completely differently. Like, I cannot do that. Like, I cannot.
No. And I think she was being funny, calling me a cow. Like, she wasn't really being funny.
That's just her slang. Yeah.
It was, she was just like, "You cow." Like, how could... But it's something that, you know, even my stepkids, my kids, they're just like, "What the heck?" I'm like, everybody's rolling around the next day. And it sounds like we're over here wacky, like all the time. No, on the occasion where
if there's a party
or something, I'm absolutely fine.
What about your mom and dad? Are they like that?
My dad's a recovering alcoholic, so he hasn't drunk in years. But I was really young when he was. I wouldn't have known. Yeah, I think my mom probably gets, I don't know. I think she would get a hangover. My mom doesn't drink a lot.
I got you.
Now.
No, it's just an interesting fun fact. That's just an interesting
fun fact. It's weird. I won't nap and I don't get hangovers. It's
weird. You know, count your blessings, girl. You can party on and stay up all freaking day. meanwhile, I'm over here. I had half of a lemon drop martini and I got to lay down.
You got to take a nap. I got to take to the bed.
That's like on a plane and stuff. Like motion. I get motion sick really easily. Like my instinct is to close my eyes and go to sleep. Like that's like on
just
a plane. I can't
imagine
not sleeping on a plane. Like that blows my mind. People that
watch
don't
all
sleep.
The movies, I watch TV shows.
Yeah, because I'm like, the movie will put me to sleep immediately. Yeah. I'm like, nah, like I cannot stay awake. I'll just be over there bobbing.
That's so funny.
So fun. Oh my God.
Well, stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Oh, I think it's time to go into big sister mode if we can.
Yes.
And, you know, we really wanted to talk today about kind of like our motherhood journeys in a different twist than we've already heard us say. And sort of also maybe talk about what we wish we could go back and tell ourselves and what we wish someone had told us at the time. Before you were a mom.
Right.
you know, when you were meeting Mark and you pretty boldly, like at 18, were wheels out of your home state and hometown. You hit the road south, which very brave. I didn't wander that far from home.
I don't know.
Yeah. I stayed close.
It ended up working out.
It did. Before you met Mark, when you were, did you want to be a mom? Did you babysit?
Always.
Did you have maternal instincts? Like, wow. Oh, how did that even start?
Always. And I'm going to be, trying to be really, really honest on this podcast. I was raised, and hear me when I say, people, I am not saying this is my opinion. I'm saying I was raised that the pretty much like role that a woman should aspire to is motherhood. And I was never, ever, ever taught to be career minded. Never.
And that's because you grew up in the 80s and the 90s.
Yes, I was born in 1972. I was not told that it was wrong to have a job. I wasn't told that it was wrong, but it was very much spoken and unspoken, taught to me that certainly once I had children, I would not work. Like that would just, you would stay home with your children. So I had a lot of those like themes in my brain. However, I always, like just from little girl on, was just good with kids. Babies always, I loved baby dolls. I played baby doll. You know, I mean, I played mommy, you know, and pretended my room was an apartment and had a fake key to unlock my door with and all that. And I was always
I used to do that too.
Yeah, take care of my little baby dolls. I had a whole setup. And, you know, I've always been very maternal. And my job of choice by the time I think I started babysitting at 11, and I kept big families and like little children when I'm 11, 12, 13 years old. It was different back then. People did not worry like they do now. Safety was not thought of in the same terms it is now. I can remember being 12 years old and being left with like a family of three, one of whom was an infant, and keeping them to like 1 a.m. And like nobody thought a thing of that. It wasn't irresponsible or weird to do that. So I learned a lot of responsibility really quickly. I do know that from deep in my soul, I always knew I wanted children. If God was going to bless me with them, I wanted a bit, you know, children and more than one. My first thought of things I would say to people if I had the chance to go back and do my life over is get a sense of yourself and go do some things on your own before you become a mother. Not saying it's bad if you don't. I didn't. So I'm speaking, I didn't. You know, I did not have a big career. I went to nursing school after we got married. Now, I was a nurse before we had children, but I didn't do any of that as a totally single woman. And I always encouraged my daughters. I was like, I'm not telling you what to do to your life. It is your life to define.
Right.
But my advice to you would be get your degree if you want one. Get out, work, buy your own car.
Have your own adventures.
Get insurance, travel on your own dime, to go do some things with girlfriends. You know, go live in another city, go do something, see the world, make it bigger, meet different people before you become completely tied to, you know, either a partner and or children or one or the other. You know, those are just regrets that I have because I feel like I went from being somebody's daughter to somebody's girlfriend to somebody's wife to somebody's mom. And I was never, there was never a real big clear sense of identity. So,
and I do feel like it was funny. Like, I remember being a senior in high school, which we were, I think, the same year, like 1990, graduated high school. My English lit teacher, he was really great. And he was like, this is a question for the girls in the class. He's like, who, after high school, who's going to be a teacher? And like, girls, who wants to be a nurse? And who's thinking about being like a secretary? These are the words that he was using at the time. In 1990.
At the time. Right.
And pretty much all the hands were consumed.
Yeah.
After that. And he's just like, and he in 1990 was going, why? Like, ladies, you could be doctors, you could be lawyers. Like, back then, he was
astrophysicist,
sort of a little more. But we were all, I don't know, maybe our parents were putting that on us. But it's interesting because your daughters and my daughter are very different now.
So like, different.
And they're the same, but they're different from us.
They're just very different.
Anna is incredibly independent. Like, carved out a sense of self, knows who she is, wants to pay her own bills and write her own ticket right now, and doesn't need a man to do that. And that is awesome to me.
I mean, it's so awesome. I'm so proud of her.
Yeah. Like, I look at her and I'm like, I want to be you when I grow up, eh?
Like, I say that all the time. I want to be as cool as my girls are. They're like literally two of the people I admire the
most. So I think we did a good job, whatever we did, to make them go. Or they were just watching going, hell no.
No way. No, but like, and I say those things, you know, those are vulnerable things to say on a podcast with absolutely no bad feeling toward my upbringing because, you know, now that—
And no regrets.
Now that I'm a mom— And I think this really hit me when I was in my late 40s. My dad was very ill. He had an injury. I went home. I took like a turn. I have three sisters. We all kind of took turns leaving our families and going to our hometown to be with our mom and dad while he was recovering to help because they were getting older and needing a little assistance still in their home. And it was the first time in maybe ever since I'd been married that I had been up there just by myself. Without Mark, without any of my children. So I was up there as an adult woman in her late 40s, but with them by myself as their daughter. And I don't know why that was the most healing trip for me, because I sincerely was able to look at them and be like, they're just people.
Yeah.
They're just people. Their marriage wasn't perfect. They stayed married a long time, 64 years, I believe. And they pushed through a lot of hard things. And I just had this incredible realization while I was during that trip. They did the best they knew to do. And everything they did came from a place of love. And they genuinely believed. That doesn't always mean that it feels like a fit for each individual child. You know what I mean? Like a parenting style doesn't always work for each kid. And maybe it wasn't the most satisfying experience for me all the time. But I just had this real sense of it was their first time through life too.
I was going to say, that is a line my daughter has recently like gifted me. And I thought, thank you for saying, I mean, it's funny you say it like that because Anna recently just said something because, you know, I've, you know, made mistakes. Obviously, we all have parenting mistakes along the way. And there's times now, especially now where I look back and I think, especially with Anna, I relied on her as a child coming up because she had her act together.
I did
in my
Taylor.
Mom lens. Mm-hmm. She was getting her homework done.
Yep.
She was smart. She had some friends. She was
dependable.
Doing, mm-hmm. Like, yeah, she was sort of like my little rock in raising these four children. Not like the boys were train wrecks. They were just needing a little bit more in different areas. She needed what appeared to me less physical support. Mm-hmm. Where Lise missed the boat.
Yeah.
Was that she probably needed me a little more, but she was just getting on with it because she saw what I was handling.
Yeah.
And looking back now, I feel some kind of way about it. And she recently said, you know, I've come to the realization, this is your first time doing life too.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought, oh,
what a gift for her to give you.
A little bit off of me.
Yeah. What a gift for her to give you. But yeah, I think the first thing I would say to younger women who have not had their children yet. If you, and I, you know, I know we all fall in love at different times, things hit you when you don't expect them, and sometimes they don't go in the order you plan. But if you're kind of planning it, I genuinely wish that I had had more life experience as an independent woman on my own and had really worked harder on developing a sense of identity because I feel like I have really done that in the last 10 years, but I had to do it post motherhood. I had to figure myself out, take some chances, redefine myself, really look deep with the add-ons of being the obligations of wife and motherhood, if that makes sense.
Totally does. Totally.
Yeah. And it's harder. It's harder to do it then. It's easier. And I think it makes you a better partner if you come in more clear-headed about who you are and what you want and what your interests are and what you want to do on your own terms. It makes you a better, more supportive, more powerful partner to whoever you end up partnering with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wish I had that. I think I depended too heavily on Mark at the beginning because I was just young. I was just young and I just didn't know a lot. So, but what about you? What do you look back and think about?
No, I definitely always wanted kids like you. I was like nannying, dog sitting. I was like animals, kid, my kryptonite. If I was like Superman walking around, my kryptonite wouldn't be this like mineral. My kryptonite literally is senior citizens, children, and animals. Like it's kind of even a joke at where I used to work. If a young couple comes in and I was in sales to buy something like a countertop from me and they had a cute baby, Yeah. I would create a line item on their quote that said cute baby discount. Like I would just 5% off because your kid's cute. And if you were a senior citizen, they were getting something free, a free sink. Yeah. I don't know. So, but yes, the answer is always wanted children. That's why on my particular journey, my infertility struggles
was so hard.
Hit really, really hard for me. And again, worked out for me with the four kids. But yeah, I always do that. And I think I look back and when Connor was put into my arms, I remember feeling like he was this perfect blank page, blank slate without one bad blot of ink that would be bad on it. He was just this perfect little slate. And I did this to myself. I felt this overwhelming, like, I must keep it pristine. I must not.
Nothing can touch it ever.
Nothing can hurt this person. Is not realistic, eh? Yeah. It's not. And then you go home and like that's real so life true. Hits. So I wish I wasn't, I was so hard on myself as a new mom. I had this, I wanted everything perfect. And, you know, to go to my I don't nap thing.
Yeah.
I wished I had been smarter about that because you're very sleep deprived in the beginning.
Oh, so sleep deprived.
And the one piece of advice I heard all the time is sleep when he sleeps.
Yeah. And you
sleep when he sleeps because they're not giving out medals for this stuff. So go to sleep when he sleeps.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I didn't do that. I was doing laundry. I was doing dishes. I was, so do as I say, not as I do.
Not as you did.
I especially in those very sleep deprived early days, do that. And then, you know, it let people help. Like my mother-in-law would, I know sometimes dynamics between mother-in-laws and daughter-in-laws can be different than if it's your mom coming over. I felt very comfortable with my mom doing anything in my house. And I remember when my mother-in-law would come over, she definitely always felt like she had to ask permission. And I think I finally got to a place, I'm like, please just do it. Like, I don't care how you load the dishwasher. Like, it's not that deep. So I would, especially in the very early days, sleep when they sleep. I wish I did that. And then also just let people help you.
And I love what you
said. You're going to have plenty of time to do it alone.
Yeah, don't be so hard on yourself because that's one thing. Obviously, I'm a new grandmother. We're less than 6 months into, you know, having a daughter who's now a mother. And that was one thing I really tried to convey to her. Like, you know, you just cannot understand pregnancy, childbirth, postpartum, recovery, new, you know, mothering an infant until you have experienced it. And know to even the same mom with different babies, every single one is very unique, very different. And I was like, how much weight you gain during pregnancy? You can control a few things about that, but you just never know. Your body's going to do what it's going to do. Take a deep breath. Do not feel like you have to be back at any certain size or any certain shape in any certain amount of time. Your body will get back to normal. Your systems, while you're breastfeeding, you're still attached to that baby. Look at it as just an amazing season where your body just created a miracle. Because I remember putting so much pressure on myself, you know, feeling like I need to lose this weight and get back in shape and be this and da-da-da-da. Yeah. Why did I? Like, I didn't at all. And it was just unnecessary. And it was fine, but it ended up just being unnecessary mental pressure. Whether you choose to breastfeed or bottle feed, who flipping cares? Do what works for you and your baby. Like, if you have a hard time with milk production and or your baby doesn't latch and or your baby is really, really a poor feeder or whatever, give that daggum baby a bottle and don't worry about it. You know what I mean? Yep. But if it works great for you and you love it and you're both thriving, by all means, do it. You know?
Yeah.
I feel like the world is more that way now than it was when we were having babies. I felt a lot of pressure. You know what I mean? Like to do things a certain way, to breastfeed.
Same.
I felt like there was right ways to do things. There is not. You and your baby need to get into a little groove, learn each other, figure out what's right and beneficial in your home and do it.
There really isn't a trophy or a medal coming out. There really isn't. Yeah. So
unmedicated childbirth, no one really cares. You know,
like, you got to do it.
C-section, vaginal birth, whatever you do, no one's going to, no one is standing at the end with a blue ribbon. So.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
I mean, and you know what's funny too is if you choose to have multiple children, I think it's interesting. The mom I was to Connor was certainly
totally
not the mom I was to Jack.
And
yes. I think it's starting to show.
Baby Jack. That's a whole nother podcast. Jack is precious. Love Jack. But that is such a good point.
He is my baby, though.
That is such a good point, though, for younger moms to hear. And that's okay. Yeah. No children, no family with multiples. Each child gets a mom and dad that are in a different phase of their life. So they're going to get a slightly different version of your parenting. And that's fine. It's not a bad thing.
There's a funny story, and my sister tells it better than I do, but like it's funny. When Connor was first born, it was almost like I had him in bubble wrap. Remember, I had my perfect pristine. I didn't want anything.
No, nothing
Everything
can happen.
Everything was just over the top. I worried about it. I overthought. I overanalyzed. Everything was perfect. And obviously, safety of all the children is always very important, but I was always very, where is he? Where is he? Get the outlet cover. Is there stairs gated? And just always just worried about where he was and what he was doing. And then I had the twins, okay, yeah. Everybody's fine. And then we were visiting my sister at her house here in Georgia. And she, you know, she's the first floor. She's a two-story home, but the first floor, it's like ground level. I mean, literally ground level. It's not like she had a high deck. It wasn't like she's up on some hill and the first floor was elevated.
Raised or whatever.
It's pretty much a ground level first floor. Right. So we're in the kitchen and it was a beautiful spring day and she had her windows open. So there was like a screen and Jack was a toddler.
Yeah.
And my sister was at one child and maybe pregnant with a second. So she was still in that where I was with Connor in the beginning.
Right.
So Jack was toddlering around her kitchen and I think he went up to the screen she went, Jack, the screen. And it was in the kitchen. It was on the first floor. And I looked over and I go, how far is the drop? Like I was thinking in actual fact, like if he did push through, it's like a foot, maybe 18
He's
inches.
Fine.
And she goes, what? She goes, what did you just say? And I was like, well, how far is the drop?
It
I mean, like, is he
bad.
Really? And she was hard. She goes, you would have never said that about
never.
Carl. And I was like, you're right. But then it was like, I think it was a funny moment to see the mellow in your parenting, you know?
Oh, we have always said that, like with Taylor, we were so like, her diaper bag matched her sippy cup, which matched her hair bow. You know what I mean? Like, and I wouldn't have left that. With Maverick, I was like, wait, is his diaper wet? Does he have a diaper on? I hope he does. Get him in the car seat. Somebody throw him in the car. We got to go. Somebody's got practice. And he is the nicest, most laid back, most congenial, easiest guy in the world. I mean, couldn't be more pleasant. And literally, which just like was along for the ride with the other three's crazy schedules and just had to roll with it and never, I mean, I can remember so vividly. And these are little moments for younger moms too that really do mean something. I can remember nursing him in the middle of the night. And that was like the only time I was ever alone with him.
Yeah.
That was the only time that I was ever like genuinely undistracted, could really like just stare at him. And I remember thinking in my mind, don't forget these moments. Like, don't forget these little moments and what he looks like. And because it was such a blur, because I had three others and we were in the height of therapy then. We were doing so many different things.
So you're being really cold.
And my mind was in autism therapy mode.
Yeah.
All the time. And, you know, Maverick was a big surprise. We weren't planning on having a newborn right then. And I just remember that. So I remember those nights. I can picture the rocking chair. I can picture pulling him into bed with me and thinking, this is the only time I have alone with him. And Taylor honestly mothered him a lot. Like when we started adding in bottles and stuff, she did a lot of that because I would be working with Tanner or picking somebody up or doing whatever. Wow. And she was old enough to handle him and be safe doing it. And I remember thinking, this really is just such a different ride. It is. And that, to the younger moms, don't feel guilty about that. Everybody's story is different. It's okay. They will turn out fine.
Yeah, but I think the youngest are kind of cool because of it. And then also, when they get to their teenage years, the mellow or the exhaustion. I don't know which one it is, the mental exhaustion. Like, my older kids would completely call me out a lot during Jack's high school years. Like, we would have never
been able
to do that. Or if I had talked to you like that, oh my gosh, we would have never gotten away with that. We'd be in so much trouble. And I don't know, I'm like, I think my soul's broken.
Yeah, I'm just exhausted. Just like, I cannot deal with this anymore. Yeah.
No, but you know what's funny though? I joke around all of this to say, Jack is so self-sufficient.
Right.
And I joke, I this is the running joke. I say I could take Jack, plunk him in the middle of like Times Square, New York City, with nothing but the clothes on his back.
Yep.
And he would be back at my doorstep here in Georgia within 48 hours with a whole new outfit and probably $500 in cash.
Because he would have figured it out. Yeah. He would have figured it out. Yeah.
He just gets on with it. So something to be said there.
There is something to be said for that, more, maybe a little bit more slack parenting.
Not recommended. Obviously, everyone needs to be engaged. But I just think there's something. I think the younger babies feel your confidence. Like, you're not freaking out over every sound, you know?
Exactly. I think that's so true. And it really is a fascinating thing when you look back and realize how differently they experienced babyhood, toddlerhood, and childhood. Even within the same family. Like, it was such a different thing. You know, with each of mine, we were in a different house, which is pretty crazy. Like, Taylor was a baby and a toddler in one house, then Tanner, then Midge. Well, actually, Midge and Mav, I guess, were both more in this house. But, so, I mean, even a different geographic location, which is just, you know, which is going to change the way your daily routines are and the way you do things, is crazy. It really is.
And I think the juggling piece of it all is just a matter of, like, you know, they don't give out, like, again, I'm going to say it again, they don't give out the medal. So, you know, everyone knows, I've heard me say it ad nauseum now, like, I was a single mom for a long time. So I had to accept help. I had to, you know, humble myself in that way and recognize I really couldn't do it all. So there's that. And there's also just knowing, like, okay, today was not the best day. I wasn't at my best. I didn't do my best by any of them. But guess what? I'm going to go to bed. And the beautiful thing is tomorrow morning is a fresh day.
And it will be okay.
I always joke that I'm pretty good at compartmentalizing things, but I think it becomes in a not in an unhealthy way, but in a way of like, yesterday is now gone. Like, whatever happened yesterday, we need to start fresh
today.
You have
to let it go.
And just try to like make the next day better. And the juggling of it all is also just giving yourself the permission. I think I had to learn this. Giving yourself the permission to understand that Connor maybe needs 75% of me today.
Yeah.
So Anna, Ben, and Jack are going to have to divvy up 25%.
Right.
Or, hey, today's a great day. Everyone's getting their 25%. Or, hey, Jack's on fire today. He's getting 100%. And I'm sorry, guys. You're just going to have to manage. You know.
Yeah.
So,
and that's normal.
We only have so much bandwidth to give of ourselves in a day. You can't make more bandwidth. You just can't. You've only got this to give out. So be okay with, because I promise it will swing in roundabouts and they'll each get their day with you. But
it does. And sometimes it comes much later in life then, you know, you picture that, that sort of like your children's when they have that epiphany. Oh, my mom was really trying. She was tired. She was stressed. Maybe she didn't understand. Maybe she needed to learn some things.
Yeah.
And it's really cool when that moment happens between you and your adult children. Another thing I look back on now, and I didn't really consciously do this, but, and I think we just talked about it in the last podcast, but I put such an emphasis on teaching fitness classes and having that part of my life as just a very strong, and, you know, I don't know if it was a place of selfishness or what, but I was relentless about I was going to get that time. Like, I just was going to get that time. And most of the time I was teaching, so it was a little part-time job I was going to. But in hindsight, that was so healthy. And it doesn't have to be fitness. It could be your reading club. It could be, you know, a sport that you play. It could be you go take flying lessons, you know, whatever it is that you want to do, you know, whatever your thing is that you need, that you go take walks or maybe you go to a museum, but never, ever, ever feeling guilty about carving out some individual time without your spouse or partner either. You know, just that you go do something that really feeds your soul and makes you feel good about yourself. And I know that isn't possible for everybody, but if it is, if you can find the time, if you have the childcare, if you can leave them with a partner, if you can leave them with a grandparent, whatever you can work out.
I wanted to pop in on the self-care piece too, and also just speak to, there were a lot of years that I was the single mom, and I was barely making the mortgage payment. So, you know, luxury of like, you know, a nail, even a haircut. So what I would say in that situation, because, you know, hopefully there's all sorts of listeners and subscribers here, is try to get yourself the gift of a routine where they go to bed at a certain time.
Yeah.
And they have to, or they have to be in their rooms, quietly, book, whatever the case may be. Okay.
Yeah.
But there needs to be, if it is really like my priority was, can I pay the light bill?
Yeah.
Can I pay the therapy bill? Sure. Can I bring the Publix or the Kroger home today? You know, like, so I couldn't be thinking in those terms.
Yeah.
So the gift that Lise gave herself was, I knew by 8:30 p.m., they had to be in their rooms. Mm-hmm. They had to be in their rooms. They didn't necessarily have to be in bed, like, you know, maybe middle school or whatever. But they had to be in their rooms, whether they were reading, you know, if they had a Game Boy or whatever. That was a real thing. So for the self-care piece, I think that's really important.
Right.
And, you know, I think you don't need to have to think you need a budget to do it. I think you just need to be able to be strict with the routine and just give yourself the quiet time.
At least
because even
time.
If it's just go sit in your room, read your book, take a shower
and watch whatever show you want, or not listen to kid shows for a while.
Yeah.
I can remember a treat that was to get in the car and not have to play kid music.
Yes.
Oh, that was always the biggest treat when I would go to the grocery store when Mark would be home. And I would be like, oh my gosh, I can play whatever I want on the radio. This is the best.
I know. It is so funny. It's those little things.
It is.
But if you are not a single mom, if you are in a relationship with a partner, or you're married and you're sharing children and you're living together and you're making it work under one roof. Nikki, I think you should speak here better than I could. How do you juggle that? Because you stood the test of time, and
I did not.
So I've learned from it, but I think I want to hear from someone who walked the walk. Like, what do you do? How did you juggle it?
You know, honestly, I don't feel like we always juggled it very well, because I know Mark and I both went through times where we each felt very lonely within our marriage and very overwhelmed, obviously extremely overwhelmed. It was kind of funny when the kids were little. We were really, really, really committed to having like date night. Whenever we could afford it or make it work, we would hire a babysitter, because my family lived almost 1,000 miles away. They were not available. And while Mark's parents are wonderful, we had four, and it wasn't always the best option for them to try to keep the whole tribe, like for a later evening and stuff. But if we were at a point where we could afford it and do, we found some girls, some of them were our therapy team, that could handle our group and could handle Tanner's needs very well. And we made a point. we were really lucky that we had a nice network of couple friends. And we, yep. for a while, were involved in like supper clubs. And that was fun too, because sometimes we would babysit or share. Like we'd all yep. go to like one couple's house for dinner, but then the kids would go to somebody else's house and everyone would pitch in. So it wasn't such an expensive evening.
Oh, that's kind of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the kids also got like a play date out of it. So we would do that. To save on costs. Because I know, I mean, babysitters are incredibly yeah. expensive. It's very, but you know, I know one thing our church used to do, which was really cool, they would do one night a month of like a free parent night out. It wasn't always okay. like super late or anything, but like you could know you could safely bring your child to the church and
have like two or three hours.
Yeah, from like yeah. 6 to 9 or something, or 5 to 8 or something. So you could at least go have dinner. And maybe if you just ran your errands by yourself, but it was offered as a free service. I mean, looking for things like that in your community are so helpful. But
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for The New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's The Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
I think for Mark and I, it really was that emphasis on getting away alone together. And we would try at least once a year to have some sort of weekend, even if it was one night, even if it was just a Saturday night. Like we left on a Saturday morning and came back on a Sunday, you know.
Yep.
To go to a hotel, literally, and get out of our house and not, yep. because, I mean, when you're in your house, you are mom and dad. You are mom and dad. And yep. and it puts a little damper on things.
Yes.
It is. Can. I mean, it's a big old block, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
So you got to get away. You got to get away.
Real and talk.
We always talk about, you know, hotel sex is better than home sex. So you got to go. You got to do what you got to do. And that was, you know, again, something that we saved for and made a point to plan, you know, whether it was on a birthday or an anniversary or whatever. And it helped. I mean, it really, really did.
Well, I mean, you guys are still going strong.
Still going.
It did. Yeah.
Still planning nights away.
Yeah, that's
although we're not mom and dad in our house anymore because we're empty nesters now. So that is a fun turnaround of the way things happen with life. Eventually, your house can be your hotel. So that's all.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, I'm not there yet. But, you know, we gotta get something going for Connor, get him out the door. But he's ready to go too. But
oh yeah, you know, I was just really blessed with Mark that he just had this unwavering commitment. And just knew that he just was always very committed to being the leader and the provider for the family. And obviously that's a massive blessing. That is just that I'm so thankful for to this day. And shout out to him. That's just who he is at his core. This is my family. This is what the needs are in this family. I'm going to provide for them. And I realize 100,000,000%, not everybody has that. I know that. And I'm thankful for it every day. And I tried really hard to be a good teammate and to work in a really good partnership and be there to support what he was doing for us. So, yeah, I mean, and it is a lot of also like probably the hardest part of being autism parents was that I think I was more guilty than him of wanting him to react to it like I was emotionally reacting to it. And he wasn't as emotional about it, but he was looking at things from a completely different lens. You know, he was thinking about the logistics and I have to provide what Tanner needs because that's how Mark showed love. I showed love with the day-to-day and I was the one actually going to the therapy and researching and reading and talking and figuring out the different modalities and what was the best one and talking to teachers and looking at school opportunities. So I was more in the trenches of the day-to-day and he was looking at like the long-term, like how are we going to provide all the way through and hopefully, you know, like we ended up in a college program, make all that possible, which left him less time to be as emotionally, you know, and sometimes that was a really hard point between us. But I had a lot of really, really wise older friends who counseled me and said, you need to give your spouse some grace to let them experience this hard thing in the way that is true to them. And you have got to take the pressure off for him to feel what you feel. He doesn't feel what you feel. He's a different person. Yep. And it doesn't mean either one of you loves the child any less. It just means that you are experiencing the world differently through this very hard thing. And you have got to give him space to feel what he feels and not put pressure on him to necessarily, you know, meet you right where you are because he's not going to be able to and hold it all together. And, you know, when you think about that, you're like, oh, wow, I would not want him to do it to me. So why was I going to do it to him?
Yep.
If that makes sense.
That makes total sense.
Did that make sense?
That made a lot of sense. And okay. I think it actually is making me think about kind of where things were starting to deteriorate for us. And,
yeah,
you know, I can reflect now at 54, kind of like
right.
what was going wrong when I was like, you know, in my mid-30s with my marriage. And I think there was a couple things at play. Like I was... Like you, I think I wanted him to be in the trenches with me in a way he couldn't, and I didn't give him that grace.
Yeah.
And I also, you know, it was a two-way street, obviously, but I can look back and just think, you know, I think I was probably a little immature, stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh, me too.
Ego got in the way, but, you know, that stuff... It's like, what is it? The seven deadly sins. And, you know, Connor, you know, talks about them all the time. He has a really funny way, he likes to just like talk about the seven deadly sins. But there were some things like, you know, just like my selfish needs or feeling so, you know, not even trying to be there for my partner in the way that I thought he needed. I was probably applying the way I wanted love to him and it wasn't working. And
right. And I think that's what I was doing too, for sure, for a long time.
Yeah. And it definitely. But I think too, we let the two separate tracks, we let them just go.
Go in different directions.
We didn't pull it back together. I think we did try some date nights here and there, but then we went from a child diagnosed to these twins. And so
it was a lot.
We really weren't that an appealing of a family to babysit for. Then I had this 2-year-old, I mean, this newborn come along with Jack. So I can look back now and take ownership. I think there's moments, there's a few pivotal moments, I think, of specific nights where maybe my husband at the time, you know, the father of my children was extending an olive branch to me in a low point.
Yeah.
And yeah. I was so wrapped up in my feelings, I dug in.
Mm-hmm.
And to what? Be right? Because being right made me be alone.
Yeah. And I know exactly what you're saying. I know.
It's painful to have to look back and really kind of look at yourself and go, but you cannot, I could not, I can say it that way, I could not move forward and certainly not expect to go into another marriage. I wanted another shot at being a wife. I wanted, when my marriage ended with Simon, I just had this overwhelming feeling of like, this can't be it for me. Like, mm-hmm. I think I can be a good wife.
A good partner, yeah, yeah.
And I was alone for 5 years and just thinking about, I really wanted a second shot at being a wife. But then that is also going to take a lot of looking inside and going, okay, what did I contribute for that to happen?
Oh, yeah.
And even when you stay married,
you have to do that. And you know what I mean? Even because there's seasons. And I don't know, if this sounds encouraging, but I want to make sure this is taken correctly, but when you're married for a long, long time, I remember the first time I thought this and I went, oh my gosh, there are going to be seasons of your marriage where you're not super happy. There are going to be seasons of your marriage where you don't feel fulfilled. There are going to be seasons of your marriage where you feel like you're just coexisting, two ships in the night driving down the same river, but you are not the same ship. You're just driving along and you're literally just getting through every day. And that's okay. And there will be seasons of your marriage where you don't necessarily, you know you love your partner, but you don't necessarily, and I would only say this publicly because Mark and I have talked about it. You know what I mean? That like, and it's a weird thing. Like when you look at this person that you were like, oh, he's the best, especially because I got married so young. He's it. He's everything. I'm so in love. And then you're like, oh shit, we're not always going to be in love. Like we're not always going to feel in love. But the caveat is then when you find the time and the resources or the childcare help and you go get away, you can rediscover it. You know, you can you can find
you gotta
each other
reconnect.
Again.
You got to reconnect. It's like a roller coaster, right?
It is.
You're like, yeah.
And it's really scary, though. The first time you feel it, you're like, oh, my gosh. I don't feel those in love feelings anymore. I don't. And it's a weird reality.
And
check.
You almost look at your spouse sometimes. And now I've been remarried now for 12 years.
Yeah, for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it outlasted the first one. So there are times where you love this person, you know you love them, but you can look at your spouse and be like, I don't like him today.
Yeah.
I don't really like him today.
I know it's the same for, my, you know, for in reverse. And it's such a strange thing. I remember the first time I felt it. I think we were married like 6 or 7 years. And I thought, oh my God.
Oh, it's like the 7-year itch. Yes, is that what it's called?
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
And like, this is the reality of marriage. Like there are times when there's not a lot of feeling there, you're just doing the next right thing. But that is such a wake-up call. I mean, that is what marriage is. It is a commitment. It is a teamwork. It's contract. It's partnership.
But I think that's usually when things can start to go south and probably did for me the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think this is what I've learned now, second time around, kind of taking some ownership of my behavior, trying to make some changes for the next situation. But I have, Tony and I just celebrated 12 years in April, married 14 years together. And the one thing I just said to him like recently was, and I know you've probably felt this, is the love you feel that on the other side of that, the 14 years, it's so much better than the butterflies.
Oh,
because you've stared each other down in some of the lowest times. You've not liked each other.
Yeah.
Then you've totally loved each other and you've gotten to share some moving, beautiful moments together. So all of that bundled into one big messy, wadded up ball of that, looking across the table at him sometimes on like a Sunday morning, just being like, God, I love him. Like,
yep. Oh, there's nothing like it.
The way I look at him is like, I love that man more than any butterfly or firework I've ever felt.
Ever felt.
You know?
And it's a different thing, but it is so true. Like, I always say, particularly, like, I remember at Taylor's wedding, like, because she got married here at our home in our yard.
Yeah. And one of the best weddings I've ever been to.
Oh, it was so fun. But looking at him and at our adult children, and like, oh my gosh, we've lived a lot of life in this house, and we have We have gone through some really dark days and we've had some huge highs and we made it. And it really is like, that is what life is all about. I mean, that is what it is like seeing where all this takes you and then being able to look back and being like, wow, it was a lot of work, but it paid off. We did it. So yeah, I mean, giving your partner grace to be who they are, to experience the goods and the bads of your life together, however they're really going to experience it, and letting them be that person is so important. You know, prioritizing time with them, so important.
And letting go of your own stubbornness, yeah. Ego, pride sometimes, because I think those were the things that took me out the
and
first
that's
time around.
So
I think I was
hard. Oh my
so
God,
prideful,
so
a little immature. And I can remember Simon's mother, I talked about her. She was literally one of my favorite human beings ever. But I remember when Simon, when we got married very fast, and it was like very, very, it was a like hotter than a pepper sprout, like that song says.
Yeah.
Simon's mother said this, and I want it to be received in the way I think she meant it. Because I know how the kind of person was. She said one of her concerns was, and she called me and told me the same thing. The first thing she said to Simon when he had told her, he had proposed to me and I said yes. And it was very quick, very whirlwind. Shocker, it didn't work out. But she said, you feel like you're in love with her. And she's like, that's amazing. She goes, but you haven't hated each other yet.
Ooh.
And she's like, are you guys going to be able to get through hating each other?
Yeah.
And I knew, and she, hate is a strong word, but that was the word she used. She's like, yeah. You haven't hated each other.
You haven't been really mad. You haven't been really hurt. You haven't, yeah.
And I think that was concerning to her.
Yeah.
And because it's been all sparks and butterflies and stuff. And I think she was trying to make a point. So, you know, I think take it all for what it's worth. But I think, you know, I've always said the best gift you can give your kids is a solid marriage or a solid relationship to stay together. Didn't work out for me. I was so lucky second time around. And even though blending families was one of the hardest, messiest, and really not fun things I've
right,
ever done.
That you did.
Mm-hmm. We did it. And on this side of it today, it's what we so got cool. going on with our six yeah. kids is the best.
And they're a fun bunch. That's a fun bunch of people.
And they like each other and they want to hang out. And we, Tony and I, will literally sit back when we're all together, like on a holiday, and we just look at each other like, holy shit, we pulled it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
We pulled this off.
It is amazing.
Because there was
it's amazing.
Times where we were tested on all sides. And then, and now, not only do you have these kids that don't come from the same two parents, different parent styles, you got ex-spouses poking right. their heads in, and then ex-spouses, partners poking their heads in, and then you're all there, and you're all in there, and you're like,
yeah.
get me off this fucking
boat.
Ride
yeah.
right now.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
And then of that, and I can say it's a cool place to be now. But
yeah.
The other piece, I think, in successful mothering is don't discount, and I know you have an awesome, awesome circle, your friendships, your motherhood friendships.
Oh, so important.
They really can help, you know, some of the most poignant, deepest moments of my parenting has come from something a friend has said to me
Same.
In almost a painful, truthfully way
yeah.
that I didn't necessarily want to hear or didn't like hearing, yeah. but it really was the words I needed. So
that is such a good point. I mean, your network of mom friends, oh my gosh.
If you can even find, I didn't always have a huge group of friends, but like if you can even find one or two.
Oh yeah, invaluable. I had a few, Lala for one, that I don't even know. If I paid her for every hour, she listened to me just talk and whine and vent and be confused and, you know, be frustrated, she'd be a very rich woman if I could pay her for every hour she spent. And I'll never forget my friend Katrina when we were at a really, really, really low point. I mean, it just stands so clearly out in my mind with Tanner. And it felt like things were regressing. It felt like we were making no forward progress. And it just didn't seem like any of the therapies we were doing were helping at all. And it felt very stuck. And I'll never forget, she looked right at me and she said, Nikki, maybe what God is telling you is that you need to say that you give him to God, and this is, you would be okay even if nothing ever changes. that you will accept the situation and that you will be, this is who he is. You love him right where he is. You meet him right where he is. And you just say, even if nothing changes from today and nothing ever is gained, it will be okay. It is okay. Maybe you just need to surrender. That was a pivotal, pivotal truth and conversation. And I did not want to hear it at that time. And I was not happy to hear it. But I needed to hear it because I needed at that time like a perspective shift and a heart change. And I needed to someone to stop me in my tracks.
And isn't that funny? You can sometimes tolerate something like that from a friend more than your spouse.
Oh, for sure. Or even your mom. Yeah.
Yeah. Or your mom or a sister. So I think trying to keep fostering those friendships and stuff. And my moment is like, was going through my divorce. And there was, at the time, there was a, quite quickly on the scene, a third person. The divorce was not final, and I was having to hand my kids over
to
every weekend to their dad and another woman. And I was not okay. I was not okay. And I was very bitter and very crappy. And I made up a not so nice nickname for the woman. Mm-hmm. It was a PG nickname. And I would say the nickname around my kids.
Yeah.
And my kids were little. And my kids went over and said the nickname.
Oh, gosh.
And my kids got in trouble. And my friend jerked me up and said,
listen,
you are being a toxic virus to your kids right now. Wow. You've got to be the mom. You've got to stop. You got to grow up. You want to say that nickname? Call me. It wasn't like I wasn't calling her a swear word. It was just like a nickname based off of her name. It was very, very childish of me.
And but it showed that you were not happy about it. Yeah.
No. And I, and it got to where I had to sit my kids down and I had to, based off of what my friend said to me, she was like, do you understand you're punishing your children by behaving like this? And I was so wrapped up in my own pain and anger that I was calling this woman this name. And so long story short, and it was, I think it was even Connor, bless him. He was so sweet and he was truth serum. He's like, my mom says yours is your name. You know, whatever. I don't. And they all had to have like silently, all had to go to timeout and it was bad. And so I ended up having to sit my kids down and go, you will make me more proud if you're good to her, if you're nice to her, if you behave, do what she says.
Yeah.
And I was literally choking on the words coming out of my mouth. But I had to do it.
But it was the right thing to do.
It took a friend to jerk my butt up and go, stop.
And
you know, and so I think fostering good friendships, and I want to say good friendships, because I've also seen this happen in my years. Some of the friends that I've had to keep close in my circle, like unless you're being emotionally or physically abused, that's a different animal. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But sometimes that's not the case. And there's friends who come in and they don't like your partner.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had them before and your partner comes in. But this is your person you're choosing. Friends that support your marriage, friends that champion that. Because if you have a friend in there that's going to sabotage stuff, call them out. I've seen it happen. I've had a couple of friends where they've had friends who don't like the spouse and they, and when my friend is mad at her husband, I will listen and I will like support her because she's in her anger. But I've been in situations where friends have come to me really teetering on like, what should they do? And my advice is always like, go fight for your marriage because it is not fun out here. I'm telling you, it's not fun.
It's harder.
And it's going to be better for you to go fight for your marriage. So I would also try to say, call in the friends that support and champion your family and the mission of the family.
Right.
And get rid of the ones that roll around in the mud with you, but stay there with you or pull you in deeper. Like that's
I was going to say pull you over your head. Yes. Oh, that's such good advice. Good advice.
Because there are those friends, unfortunately.
There are. And it is so true. Like other moms, other women, like here we are like literally 9 times out of 10, the lifeline. And where you learn the most, where you get the most humor, where you get the most support, where you get the most respite. I mean, I can remember keeping each other's kids for each other so you could go get a hair appointment or you could, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Go to the dentist and not have to have a car seat with you. You know what I mean? Do things like that. And that was just such a gift looking back, you know, save each other the money on a babysitter and know that they're safe and loved and helping each other with, you know, a lot of times I couldn't drive my kids to practices or lessons because I would be on the road to Columbia and back getting Tanner. So I had a network of people who would make sure my girls got at least to the, on the front side, got to their lesson, and then I'd be home in time to pick them up and things like that. It's just, it's invaluable.
It's a juggle act, but we can do it.
We can do it.
I feel like I've said everything I feel like I would want to share from my experience with all our moms out there and or caregivers. And I think some of this could apply to a dad.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Especially if you're the one that's, you know, decided to be the primary caregiver. For sure. For sure. But yeah, I mean, don't be hard on yourself. Give yourself grace. Find some identity. Spend time with your partner. You know, finds a strong network of mom friends. I think those are the big things.
And your self-care, whatever it looks like, whatever you can do.
You can do,
even
whatever
if
you have access to.
Get them in the damn bed at a certain time.
Exactly.
But I feel like big sis time's over. And I definitely want to talk about if there's any good news from the week. And you know, I kicked off a little bit of good news from my end, but also, you know, I know sometimes you have fun stuff on your end, but I just want to share our good news this week. And it was Wednesday. So obviously everyone knows Connor and I, you know, we partnered with Just Be and really wanted to get behind advocating for Rio's Law coming into Georgia. It was passed in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Rio's Law basically is an identifier license plate. It is voluntarily. It's an optional plate. If a family chooses, it's a fit for them. It's not a mandatory plate. It has a identifier on the plate. It's not a charity plate. And it's it will just identify that there is someone either driving or a passenger in the vehicle with neurodiversity or autism, which would trigger maybe some notes in CAD when the license plate is run, but it was also triggered just at the glance of the plate that the first responder, whether it be police, fire, EMT, should approach differently or just be aware that there would be some behaviors that might be unexpected. Just helping more interactions be safer with first responders and the neurodiverse community. Yes. Also, the bill had included in it mandatory training.
That part is amazing.
It's killer. It's killer. So even if you don't want the plate, and you know, we live in Metro Atlanta, Connor and I, but there are corners of our state that are very rural. Very isolated.
For sure.
And not a metro city. Those officers are getting trained.
That's amazing.
And I'm just hoping it's going to strengthen the relationships with the neurodiverse community and police and fire and EMTs and also help these families feel a safer place to be, feeling trust and understanding.
Right.
That is a huge win. So the bill was passed unanimously, bipartisanly in the House and the Senate. Connor testified before the Senate. He's testified before the House of Representatives, the Public Safety Committee. Connor put in a lot of hours, and we were down at that state capitol. It's a long day. It's standing around with maybe sometimes just a bottle of water and a bag of peanuts, and I'm not kidding. It was a lot of hard work. I didn't realize what really goes into the wheels of making a bill a law.
Yeah, legislative change.
And I saw it firsthand, and it was a really cool process. What was beautiful about this experience is autism does not see your skin. It does not see your religion. It doesn't see your political party. It doesn't see, you know, your age, your geography. It doesn't see it. Autism is all of us. And there were beautiful Democrats, Republicans, people from all walks.
I love it.
Coming up to us, me and Connor, at the State House saying, my grandson, my son, my daughter, my sister-in-law, my cousin. Somebody was touched by it. And they're like, we've got to help get this passed. And it was everybody circling up. And it was beautiful.
And that's so amazing. You guys,
that's the bright spot.
So many hours in this. I mean, I don't know how many days we've called, and you're like, I can't talk. I'm going to
the Capitol.
I mean, it's been a lot of work. And
from January to now. Yeah.
What and an incredible way to be an advocate. I mean, that was an amazing experience.
It was beautiful. But what was cool is Governor Kemp, so the bill went to his desk, it had passed, and it could just have sat there.
Yeah.
But he had a bill signing ceremony. He signed 11 bills into law. Rio's law was one of them. The governor had some very nice words to say about Connor. The Speaker of the House had some nice words to say about Connor and his work and his efforts. And just saying they hope other young people Connor's age take a page out of his book and help advocate.
Try to do
but
things.
We got to stand there. We got to physically watch Governor Kemp sign the bill. And he has to sign it in several areas. So we each got a pen that he actually used to sign it into law. Layla Luna was there, Rio's mom. It was the lobbyist,
awesome.
Senator Strickland. It was great. So good news for the week was
yep.
Rio's law is now actually a law here in Georgia. And, you know, if you feel comfortable and you feel like that plate will help your family, you can start getting it, I think, in January.
That is awesome. Go Lisa and Connor. I'm so proud of y'all.
Really happy. And do you have any good news of the week, Nikki? Anything you want to share?
So Tanner, as I mentioned, he and Midge were at Night of Too Many Stars last
yes.
night.
Yep.
Okay. Well, he got to meet Christopher McDonald, who played Kent Mansley in the movie Iron Giant. Iron Giant is an old movie from back in the 90s that Tanner is obsessed with and loves and knows every word of dialogue, every scene. I mean, he's obsessed. He sent me a picture last night with Christopher McDonald. I said, Tanner, who's that? And he said, his name is Christopher McDonald. I said, he looks familiar. What did he play in? Christopher McDonald played Kent Mansley in The Iron Giant. He's also in Grease 2, and he's in Happy Gilmore. I said, Tank, are you in heaven? Yes, Mom, I'm in heaven. Mom, I told Christopher that I know every word to the part in Iron Giant where the general says to Kent Mansley that he just blew Uncle Sam's dollars out of his butt. It was so funny. So
I love that
here
man.
In South Carolina, picturing Tanner in L.A. telling Christopher McDonald that I can quote you line for line when you told Uncle Sam.
I bet he could do it better than he could. 100%.
So, yeah, I actually need to check and make sure that Tanner didn't require resuscitation last night because he met so many people that he was excited.
Just took him right out. That's
took
awesome.
Him right out. As far as I know, he's alive and well. So
well, I love that, and I, hopefully yes. with those. That just those two pieces of news just
yes those are
such
good
a good way to end things
on
a high note.
They are, and y'all stay put. If you know, we have got guests coming that I'm
promise
so you're excited about.
We're getting a very varied
lineup. A very very like from some things you love in the spectrum, some things are very not. Some are from the autism world, some are not. So I think it's going to be really good over there.
We're excited.
Weeks. Very excited. Really cool.
So, and some that hopefully you'll be just laughing.
Yeah, a few that are just to laugh. Let's freaking lighten up a little bit. Yes, I love that.
Have some fun. And you know, we love me mean it.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Pioneer.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.